I am so fortunate and grateful that I get to be a regular part of people's days. There's a reason that they go for that certain mug or that bowl. And I really think I hope it has a lot to do with how it feels as much as how it looks.
Hi, I'm Bob Acton, and I'm pleased to share my conversation with the wonderful Lisa McGrath. Lisa completed her BFA in ceramics from the Alberta College of Art and Design in 1997, and she's currently a potter in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and she uses intense color and complex surface designs to create wonderful pieces, with many of them having an additional sculptural component. We talked about her journey in clay, her use of color and surface design, of course, and she shared some technical ideas, but I think you'll connect with the deep reason she started using her lichen glaze. You can find Lisa in her various online locations in the show notes, and I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Welcome to Color and Ceramics, the podcast for ceramic artists who want valuable ideas about using color from leading artists and world-class experts. Here's your host, Bob Acton, a sculptor and ceramic artist who's fascinated with color and how potters, sculptors, and artists use color in their work. Tune in as he talks with his guests about color, techniques, and the impact of color on people and art itself.
Lisa, thank you so much for joining the Color and Ceramics podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Bob. I'm very excited to hang out with you for a little while
Yeah,
here.
this will be great. You know, I love your use of color and surface design in your work. And as you know, I've got a few pieces of yours in the cupboard downstairs that I use on a regular basis. And not only do I love the, I'll call them intense colors, I guess, that you use, and also the textural work that you do with some of your glazes. But I also really like those sculptural pieces and the little bunnies and stuff that you've got on the thing. So I'm super excited about having you here today.
Yay. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Hey, this work that you do really represents years of work in clay. I don't think you started it just yesterday. And so I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your journey. Like, how did you get to where you are today?
Sure, I attended the Alberta College of Art, which is what it was called way back when I attended in the late 90s. Went through a 4 years program under Greg Pace and Sally Barbier there, which was a really nice mix of really highly refined wheel throwing work that Greg Pace does. And Sally Barbier was a sculptural artist at the time, using many different elements that she would bring together and sort of hang things. And so I feel like I had a really good mix of sculptural and functional influence there. And straight out of art school, the Alberta College of Art in my final year became the Alberta College of Art and Design, so they were given university status. So I think I graduated in 97, and then I went back for a semester to pick up my degree since it was just a few extra courses, and came out of there and started working for an art center, which was amazing and continues to be amazing. I've been there for 26 years, Wildflower Art Center. And I think I can probably thank the art centers quite a bit, because I have always been fortunate to work around creative people, many, many creative people, and having many influences. And I think it definitely kept me propelling forward with my work. So I guess that's where I am today. It's been, let's see, well, I graduated in 97, so it's, been quite a while that I've been at this, I guess.
Been a few years, and it's neat. I started my journey in clay at the Wildflower Center years ago.
Oh, did you really? I
Yes,
didn't know that. Oh,
absolutely. That was my
excellent.
first. I had always wanted to be a potter, and then years later in life, I said, "That's it. I better do this." And so I started taking a class over there and made my
Awesome.
first few ashtrays, if I recall.
Wonderful. It's a good place. It's a good
That's
place.
right. It is a great place. Absolutely. Hey, I'm really interested in what inspires people. And so I wonder if you could tell us what is inspiring you these days about the work that you're making.
I feel like it's mostly about surface design for me right now. Ceramics is moving into this sort of area where the technology is sort of driving everything forward, and there's so many layers of color and pattern, and we now have so many materials at our fingertips that I feel like, you just jump onto Instagram and you see all of these magnificent potters out there doing all these wonderful layered things with their work, and I guess that's what really inspires me these days. But going way back, you can probably tell from my work, I've always been inspired by, the natural world around us. You and I are both fortunate to live in Calgary, where Alberta, Canada, where we're so close to the mountains. I actually live just on the very west edge of the city, so that I'm in the mountains and literally, I think 40 minutes we're in Canmore. And the mountains, the forest, all of the little critters that live within. I do have a lot of little critters in my artwork. Also, really up close, often when I go for hikes and stuff, I'll spend a bit of time with some lichen on a rock, maybe eat a sandwich and really look at that, which I think you can also see in my work. Because with my work, I really want it to be very visually stimulating, but also physically. I want that cup to feel really nice in your hand. So I use the lichen glaze often on almost everything that I make, with the exception of sculpture, perhaps, because it's really about how it feels as well as how it looks for me.
And does some beautiful things there. Has that taken you a little while to learn some of those techniques that you're using?
For sure, quite a while. I mean, going back when I was in my final year of art school, they really wanted us to focus on what our thing was, and I can remember having a serious sit down with one of my professors, and him saying, are you a functional potter or are you a sculptor? What are you?
Make your mind up.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I don't want to choose. I think I did wind up going the sculptural route for my final year, though. But once I got out of art school, I was like, I'm both. I have to be both. I get a lot of satisfaction out of building a sculptural form. I usually use animal forms to sort of convey emotion and a message. That's why I love rabbits, because rabbits have so many muscular features behind their faces that you can really convey emotion. They're not really rabbits, they're kind of people, I'm sculpting rabbits, but I'm kind of sculpting, rabbits with anthropomorphized sort of emotion and thought behind them, I think. But I really get a kick out of being able to convey that sort of message, and people looking at it and wondering, what is he thinking about? What is going on there? But also, I definitely get a nice dopamine rush from building a very functional teapot, so I kind of have this split personality that some, with the sculptural and the functional, sometimes they converge, but most of the time they don't.
They look like they converge pretty well for me when I see the things. I
That's
don't
good
think you should be so hard on yourself.
to hear.
How do you so one of the challenges I think that we have is managing this relationship between form and color surface design. So how do you think that through when you're doing your work?
I think, as many of us artists do, I draw everything before I even think about making it. So, I'll sketch out the shape of a mug, and then I'll figure out what kind of patterns will work best on them, and how the glaze goes, so that I've got almost a formula of making that mug before I even start. Just because everything has to happen in a certain successive order. And I have very limited time in my studio because I do have a full-time job at the art centers in that lovely creative space. So when I do have my studio time, it has to run like a finely greased wheel or greased machine, I guess. So I don't know. I'm looking at a mug right now and trying to think, how I guess Like I said before, I really want it to feel very nice, but I also want it to be really visually stimulating. So, yeah.
So you've said a few things there, so that I've got a few questions for you. So
Yeah.
one of the things I hear you saying is that you're focused on making the piece itself functionally, and it's got to feel right in your hand, and or however whatever piece you're making, it's got to have that form that's just right, and then you think about adding the color and surface design. And you use different kinds of things in your surface design, if I understand correctly. You're using some glazes and some underglazes, and without giving your secrets away, although you may want to give your secrets away, what are some of those techniques that you talked about that you need to layer through in your when you're being
Right. So, I just in the past year and a half, I guess sorry, I'll start over again. I use a lot of pattern with bright colors. I like to live my life thinking that I'm a fairly happy person, and I guess I want my pots to convey that as well. I want people to feel happy when they look at them. So for the most part, they involve really bright colors and different layers. How I get my layers is through paper decals and that kind of thing. So a piece is made, all that I focus on is, throwing it, making a nice handle that fits really well in your hand. I like a really big mug, so I'm gonna throw that first piece and hold it and see how I feel about it before I put the rest of the mug's handles on. And then everything gets bisqued, and then comes the decorating stage. So then I start in with my underglazes, and I'll often use one of those decorating discs, and I'll divide my forms into different sections, say six sections. I'll decide which sections will be reserved for I usually call it my blue bubbly glaze, but it's a type of lichen glaze or reticulated glaze. And that's the tactile kind of portion of it. Those I leave blank, and then I'll have all my different paper decals, and I'll start by just adding color and then adding decals, adding more color, more decals, more color. So I usually wind up having about two to three different layers of color on those sections, and then the piece gets bisqued again. And then after that is the glazing, and the reticulated glaze that I use is really what's the word? It's a bit of a pain in the butt to work with, truth be told. So that reticulated glaze, in order to make it really work well, I have to mask off the sections that I want to be glazed, and I use an auto body tape because it's got a little bit of stretch to it, so it'll go over curved surfaces and it'll stick really nice because I'm a sucker for nice clean lines. And then I'll wax the handle out. I'll mask off all the decoration and the color that I had done in the last bisque firing, and then I dip it into my reticulated glaze and I put it directly into the kiln so that I never touch it again, because if I touch it again, some of that reticulated glaze will fall off, and sometimes it does fall off. And luckily, it's organic enough, I think, looking, it sort of looks mossy, that if a little bit of it does come off, it's still okay with the piece. So I guess that also points out that I also have to plan how my kiln load is going to be loaded before in my head before I even start. So I know that the bottom of my kiln's a little bit cooler, so I'll put my taller vessels in the bottom and then shorter on top, so that everything gets cooked nicely. And then usually when I unload my kiln, I have a little bit of chipping to do because that reticulated glaze falls off. But it's a labor of love.
Yes. So there's lots of stages to your pieces.
There are a lot of stages, yeah. And I feel like the further I get in my practice, the more stages I give myself. I think, aren't you supposed to work towards making things a little more streamlined? That's not the way that my brain works.
Right. But it
Yeah.
sounds like you really need to be pretty efficient. I think you mentioned that before, right? That if
Yeah.
you're working with all those different levels, I guess, then you really need to be sharp about, well, I got to do this first, then I do this, and so on.
Yeah, which is why that planning stage. My sketchbooks are just full of notes. It's funny because people will grab my sketchbooks and say, "Oh, can I look at your sketches?" And they think that they're going to see some cute little bunnies or something like that. But it winds up just being forms with so many notes underneath because it's a plan from beginning to end because these things take so many different stages. Yeah. Only three firings though.
Just three. And
Yeah.
so do you work with a series of pieces, or are you tending to work one-off pieces? How do you do that?
That's a good question. I do tend, because my time is limited in the studio and it's my very favorite best time. I do tend to, spend 2 solid days where I will just will throw 2 full kiln loads, or 2 or 3 days. Yeah. So I'll wind up having like 30 mugs to decorate. And mark my words, the decorating process takes phenomenally longer than the actual making process. Yeah, so I will likely, let's say in a given month, I'll spend probably maybe 4 days wheel throwing, and the rest of the month will be decorating. Yeah, because
Yeah,
that decorating takes quite a while.
I bet it does take quite a bit of, one of the words that's popping into my mind, I don't know if this relates to you or not, but you must have a lot of patience to be able to manage that process. Do you feel that, or is it?
I think so. Yeah, I think I have a lot of patience. I also, ceramics can be so volatile even after I've been doing it for, 30 plus years. And I'm just really good with letting things go. That's I think kind of part of the process as well, is that patience for sure, but sometimes if that if I here's another little idiosyncrasy of that lichen glaze. If I don't wait long enough for the liner glaze to dry, at least 24 hours, the lichen glaze will all fall off in the kiln as it's heating up, because for whatever reason, the pot has to be bone dry again before I can glaze again. And sometimes I have tried to push things for sure, if there's a market coming up or something like that, and I just really, maybe I'll put it in the kiln for a couple of hours on 200 to get it to dry a little bit, and I think it's dry and it wasn't, then I just wind up with a kiln load full of lots of shelves to chip. So I have learned over the years just to let ceramics dictate really what my schedule is. Yeah.
That's nice. I keep thinking that somebody out there, maybe a God, keeps giving me the opportunity to learn patience by getting
Yes.
into clay. Like
Yes.
it's so challenging with all of those different components that you talked about, right? There's the dryness, there's the form, there's the color, there's the kiln work, all those kinds of things. So that when we actually get a piece out of the kiln that's pretty and does exactly what we want, it's a miracle in some ways.
Yeah. It really is, and then clay companies do things like change their recipes, and we can no longer get certain ingredients for glazes anymore. Right now there's a Gerstle borate issue, and then we're sort of doing this all over again.
Yeah, you got to
But
start
it's
all over.
it is a labor of love. We used to joke in art school that mud gets in the blood, and when I was in art school, I certainly wasn't going to go into ceramics. I was going to be a photographer, but then I found out how much the camera cost.
Yeah, very cool. Well, I'm really glad you stuck it out in clay because I think people, once they hear this episode and start to search out your work, they'll see how beautiful it is. One of the things that you said a little while ago was about maybe the emotional or psychological impact that you wanted from your work. And can you talk a little bit more about that, to
Yeah,
help people understand that?
for sure. I am very fortunate that I will often hear, "Oh, that's my go-to mug. Oh, you're Lisa McGrath. That's the mug I use every day." And I don't use my own mugs. I don't know why. I don't use my own mugs. I like to use other people's mugs, but it's just, I'm so fortunate and grateful that I get to be a regular part of people's days. there's a reason that they go for that certain mug or that bowl. And I really think I hope it has a lot to do with how it feels as much as how it looks. I'll tell you a story about the reticulated glaze that I use. I live here in Calgary, and most of my family lives in Southern Ontario. And in order to share myself, I would, of course, send ceramics home, for Christmases and birthday presents and that kind of thing over the years. And many years ago, my grandmother was, getting on and starting to go blind. And I suddenly didn't have that connection with her where I could send her a piece of myself because she couldn't, I know she could still use it, but she couldn't see it anymore. So I started thinking, what's a way that grandma can still see these pots or some way that she can still enjoy them? And there happened to be a glaze club happening at the art center that I work at. And some of the people were just sort of dabbling with triaxial blends, which is just three different ingredients, and seeing what those ingredients did, how they interacted with each other. And one of the students was sharing with me that she was working on sort of a type of root or a type of reticulated glaze, and a light bulb just went off, like, oh, that is a way for my grandmother to enjoy looking with her fingers at the pots. So I asked her to share her recipe with me and asked her if it would be okay if I sort of took it and ran with it and made it into something that I wanted. And she was like, go for it, which was very nice for her. It's had many iterations over the years, and I finally landed on the sort of texture that I like. It's not dry, as most lichen glazes do feel dry. This is sort of a rounded, kind of pebbly kind of feeling. And I was able to send these items to my grandmother, and she could feel it and really enjoy it, and she really appreciated it, and she could still see my pottery through her fingertips. And it's a funny way of making accessible pottery, I guess, but yeah.
What a great story. I mean, I think that is really lovely about not only your love for your grandma and being able to connect, but to manage to modify your work to be able to let her experience it in a tactile way. That's really awesome.
And she is long gone now, but I think this glaze will probably stay with me forever. I actually think this glaze is how people recognize my work for the most part. So, it'll last. So, yeah, thank you, Grandma.
That's Grandma's glaze. That's probably true. I bought a mug of yours years ago and I loved it so much, but I couldn't figure out who made it. I couldn't remember. And I eventually got back to you through that lichen glaze, seeing your other bits of work, and I went, oh, it's Lisa's mug. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Hey, I'm really love being out in the bush and as I call it, and being in nature and connecting with animals, and these days really paying attention to biodiversity and those kinds of things that are really important, I think. How do you want your little rabbits and other critters, as you call them, to, and what kind of impact do you want to have on people with those?
I guess I want people to see themselves in them. I want them to bring them to a happy place. Like I said, for the most part, I had kind of a challenging upbringing, and one day I just sort of woke up in my early 20s and thought, I'm the only person in charge of my life now, and I'm gonna spend it being as happy as I can be. So I guess I am trying to give people happiness in a way. Sometimes my bunnies tend to be a little bit dark. Sometimes they're not always super cute. But maybe there's a story in there, and maybe people can identify with whatever that story is. I don't know. Also, I make a lot of rabbits. I thought eventually I would probably move on to something else, but I seems pretty stuck on rabbits still right now, which is okay, and I'm going to keep exploring that. But in my more sculptural work, I am exploring the idea of the happiness and rabbits and home, because I build a lot of rabbits with structures on their backs, you know, buildings, sort of park scenes, almost like they're the ecosystem, but they're a traveling ecosystem, and they're bringing home with them wherever they are. So I haven't quite worked out exactly what that means yet, and haven't written an artist statement about it yet, but it's definitely something that I'm exploring, the idea of rabbit and home. Yeah. I did have a little studio bunny for quite some time too. Her name was Lilac, and she was my daughter's rabbit when she was about six, but soon became my rabbit, as most, I think, children's pets do. And she, sorry, I was going to say, she lived to be a ripe old 13 years old. She didn't find out that rabbits' life expectancies were much younger. But yeah, so I had a model in my studio for many, many years.
Very cool, very cool. Now, what do you think a challenge has been for you over the years? You are super successful now with your work, but can you share a challenge that you had to overcome in some of your ceramic work?
You know, I'm going to go back quite a ways, but you know, when I got out of art school and started working for the art centers, that sort of took over my life for a little while. I started building my life because I was quite young then, and had a child, and found that while she was little, I didn't actually touch any clay whatsoever. There was probably about 6 years where I didn't feel like an artist anymore. I was a mom, and I would not give that those years up for anything. Mark my words. But when I came out of that, and you know, found she was in about grade one or two, and I thought, I have some of my own time back again. I'm going to be a ceramic artist again. But I had no idea even where to start. I didn't know who I was or what my thing was. You know, like what is my body of work look like? I had no idea, and I had to start from scratch all over again. But you know, working at that art center, there was so many wonderful creative people around me that just propelled me forward. One person, Mindy Andrews, just sort of took my hand, and she's like, "Let's go, let's do this. We could do this together. Let's go." You know, and she just sort of pushed me forward. You know, keep trying, keep doing things. So, you know, I think I probably spent a good 2 to 3 years figuring out what my work looked like again. And then when I did figure it out and thought, "Oh, I might have something here," that's when I really started, you know, getting into what you see today. Right now, I'd say what my biggest challenge is definitely time. You know, I really appreciate that job at the art centers, and the people that I get to work around, and the fact that it pays my mortgage so well. But I wish I could have a lot more time in the studio. I think most artists feel that. It happens to me mostly at night, but I think most artists get this feeling that, you know, there's this thing in my head, and if I don't get it out, I'm going to make myself crazy. I'm going to go crazy. But sometimes I have to tell myself just to calm down, because, you know, it's Monday and I can't get there until Friday. So just, you know,
Feel that.
I keep a sketchbook by my bedside so that I can write everything down. And sometimes I'll have to Google images in the middle of the night. I woke up the other night thinking, "Oh, I'd really like to build some rabbits sitting on Victorian stools." I don't know why, but I had to Google some Victorian stools at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then I could go back to sleep. It's really funny these days, though, I have to say, because there's so much AI generated work out there that, you know, in the middle of the night, in my fuddled up little brain, I was trying to figure out whether these stools were actual stools, like actual antique stools, Ottomans built many years ago, or if they just came from an artificial place, because sometimes it's really hard to tell that. But
It is very hard to tell.
yeah.
You know, it was interesting that you were talking about when you got back into clay, you know, when your daughter was in grade one or two, and you felt like you'd lost your way a little bit. And I think lots of younger artists, younger, I don't know if that's the right term, junior, maybe are
Emerging, yeah.
emerging, are trying to find their own style, and they really stick on this. What is my style? What is, I know I suffered with that for a while. Have you got any advice for people about how to deal with that idea and to find their style?
I would say, like I said, I was fortunate that I was surrounded by a lot of creative people, and I could see, what they were doing, and just being willing to try things in different styles. Instagram is such a wonderful thing now. We didn't have that back then, but for sure, take inspiration from the things that you see. I think for the most part, potters are pretty forthright and giving. I think we're a generous bunch. Certainly at potlucks, we do good potlucks. We're a generous bunch, but I think, just if you can find a place where you can be around others who don't necessarily think exactly like you, but are, taking creative steps in their own practices, whether it be art or music or anything. If you can join some coffee talks, coffee and pottery talks, and look on Instagram, and maybe don't just leave it to YouTube, because there's a lot of interesting things going on YouTube, I think. But it's good to get out and go to galleries and just be open. And I know when I was younger, I was really seeking to figure out what my thing is. I want to know now, I really want to know now. And now that I'm pushing 50 and I'm looking back, and it's like, just take your time. Take your time, it'll come eventually. Just keep making work. That's all.
Yeah, like a couple of key things I hear you saying that I've actually heard others say in these interviews is try lots of stuff, practice, and hang around with people who are making work, right? And it's that connection that we have with people in our community that really can make a big difference for us.
Yeah, for sure. One of the people I work with also, who you also know, Susan Thorpe, I remember her coming to me one day and saying, there's this technique where you can center 15 pounds of clay on a wheel if you just center 5 pounds at a time. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, we should try it. Let's try it. And we just spent a day, trying to make really big forms with these, 5 pounds at a time centered on top of each other. And it was, nothing professional came out of that day at all, but just the fact that, we were open to, yeah, let's try this and see what happens. And I think that came out of a Tony Clonell workshop in the first place. We saw Tony throwing these great big giant things, and I remember saying to her, there's no way I'd be able to center all that clay at once. And she's like, oh, I have a secret to show you, which wasn't really a secret. You can do five pounds at a time. So, just being willing to, try anything, even if you know exactly what your process and what your practice looks like right now, just keep trying things, because you wanna keep propelling forward. I often have people come to me and say, I bought this mug 3 years ago, and I'm wondering if I could get another one. And I always have to say to them, that mug was made 3 years ago, and this is what the mugs look like this week, because I very, very rarely use the same patterns and the same designs on things. So I hope that people view my work as constantly propelling forward. That's kind of the way that I view it. But
It's
just
like
keep
a
going.
journey, isn't it? And you talk about being out in the mountains and hiking out in the mountains and going on paths. And I sort of think of our work in ceramics in a similar vein, that we're going to be on a path and we turn around a corner and something new appears, and that might take us down another path. And we have to just be okay with being on that path.
Exactly. I think too, if I could give a little bit of advice, it would be keep making work for yourself. Every single piece I make is for me. The fact that people think they're pretty and they want to buy them is a really fantastic bonus. And I'm grateful for that, or my house would be filled to the gills with old ceramics. But when I'm in the studio and I'm making mugs for a gallery, I'm making those mugs for me because I need to get a kick out of the fact that I've made them, or I don't want to put them out in the world. So yeah, I guess, just stay true to yourself and keep making work for yourself. Everything is made for me, and then if you want it, that's great.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. And I think that love or energy that you put into a piece, because you love it, comes out, and that's what people connect with when you're at the sale.
That's
Hey, Lisa,
great.
thanks so much for spending some time with us today. I really appreciated this. You've got some awesome ideas and beautiful work, and I'm sure our audience will get a real sense of you and your work, and I'm sure somebody will connect with you. And we'll put your information about how to connect with you up on our website so people can do that.
That's awesome. Thanks for having me today, Bob. It was a fun conversation.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Color and Ceramics Podcast with Bob Acton and his guests. Please help others find the podcast by subscribing to this podcast wherever you find your podcasts, such as iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, or other podcatchers. And don't forget to give us a review. We'll see you next time.